The IPO landscape is shifting. With increased market activity and new trends emerging, private companies are facing both opportunities and challenges as they consider going public. In this episode of the Privately Speaking podcast, host and private enterprise partner Erica Whitmore sits down with Jack Castle, Senior Vice President at NASDAQ, to explore the trends, challenges, and opportunities in today's IPO market and what it means for your business.
Jack, so excited to have you back on the podcast. I can't thank you enough. I think we probably need to send you a gift at this point. You've been on so many times, but you're a very popular guest. But for those of us or those who are listening, I hope there's new listeners. Why don't you take just a couple minutes and introduce yourself?
Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me again, Erica. I appreciate the opportunity. So my name is Jack Castle. I'm the Senior Vice President here at NASDAQ, and I head our listings business for the Western and Central U.S. So working with private companies as they make that transition to the public markets and then overseeing those continued relationships with our incredible listed companies as they're listed on NASDAQ. I've been here about 7 years. I'm based in San Francisco, so been through some very fortunate to work with some incredible partners, some incredible entrepreneurs and founders, and certainly some incredible companies.
Well, I'm really glad that I don't know if the stars aligned or how it worked, but we spoke earlier this year and we talked about needing to, you know, catch up again in the fall. And I'm really glad that we did it at this time because it definitely feels like the market's picking up. I mean, everything I'm looking over here to my left at some stats. I mean, it looks like there's a pretty strong year for IPOs, especially in terms of number of IPOs. It looks like proceeds are maybe a little down, but what's your thoughts? What are your thoughts on what's going on right now?
Yeah, so a lot of what you just shared, and we're equally excited. I think if we look back just the first half of the year and even year to date here and coming into the fall, we have seen an increase in activity. It's not as crazy as maybe some expected or hoped for, which I think for sure. A lot of us is still fine because we're continuing to find our footing, both for the companies, for the advisors, for certainly the investors. But I think, as you mentioned, there was a slight pause in the market with a few good deals with SailPoint and CoreWeave earlier this year. Then we had Liberation Day. We saw a brief pause as the market had some volatility, but then picking up with eToro in May, and then you had Circle. You had Chime, of course, was a great listing with us here at NASDAQ and certainly San Francisco base. And then so we started to see that momentum really carry. And I think it really emphasized the strong appetite for investors, especially for companies with specific growth profiles. So I think as we look back to some of that receptivity, a lot of it is really due to not only the great stories that each of these respective companies had, but there was a really robust investor engagement over several rounds of TTWs and non-deal roadshows that allowed those potential investors to become familiar with each of the companies. And that really resulted in a high roadshow and TTW conversion, right? So a lot of these companies, they're starting this process to engage investors as well as analysts 12, even 18 months ahead of a potential listing. And I think one of those common denominators that each of these companies did well is getting out there early and starting that process. So when it came to time for the roadshow and for those kind of final commits, they had that familiarity with each company's story, with their KPIs, with their model, and therefore they were more bullish coming into those companies, not only at the initial allocation for the IPO day, but in those subsequent trading days. And I think that's where you, again, really saw the continued support throughout those, again, subsequent weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to ask you a question related to what you just said. Is that a change? Meaning, you know, I've been a part of quite a few IPOs, nothing like your experience, obviously, but is that a longer time period than what you have historically seen companies do as they're kind of preparing to go public? In other words, is kind of the the little bit of a lull that was experienced actually gave those companies an opportunity to maybe do some of that legwork in advance?
Yes, exactly. Okay. That. I think that it had always been a best practice, but yeah. I think given the lull, as you mentioned, in the markets, it allowed these companies to either start those conversations or continue those conversations on a more regular cadence well in advance of their initial listing. And that has now, I wouldn't say move the goalpost, but that's now become a bit more of the standard. So as we are speaking with companies that are looking at a mid-26, even a second half 2026 offering, here we are in Q3 or towards the end of Q3, they are starting some of these conferences. They are starting some of these very pointed conversations with specific investors to just build those relationships, start to tell those stories. And again, from a best practice perspective, regardless of the time frame, this really allows companies to get that feedback loop. Because I think a lot of companies going through this, and again, we're fortunate for both of us to see a lot of these deals, but for a lot of management teams and executive teams, this is their first time through it. And so that feedback loop and marrying both your external comms and marketing with your equity story, and then understanding the investor's lens on how they look and value certain KPIs and what buckets and what comps are they comparing you to, that really helps you to shape and bulletproof that story. So once the lights are on and once you're really starting to work towards a timeline, now you have answers to each of those diligent questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, in terms of just if you look at the IPOs in the last year, maybe even you look at the first half of 25, some of those companies, they don't look like all the others either. And so you have to have time to have that feedback loop in order for everybody to understand the company, right, and what they're trying to do, because it might not look exactly like everybody else or others that are out there in the industry.
Very much so. Well, and we see that a lot too, and specifically with the analysts. So there's the investor core group, but then again, strong recommendation or best practice is starting to tell that story in a very similar fashion to the analyst community, right? So 25 days after your IPO, the different analysts at the respective banks will pick up coverage, and they're going to issue their buy, hold, sell, or overweight, neutral, underweight, right? And they're kind of forecast for you. And in a lot of instances, and we're seeing this now as companies continue to work through the digital transformation and start to leverage, whether it be AI or different elements to drive those efficiencies, sometimes they don't fit perfectly in a bucket. Right. Sometimes they are a company, a one-of-one company. So getting ahead of that with the investors as well as the analysts to say, hey, we know you want to put us in this bucket, but here's why we should straddle, or we should be in this other bucket, more comparable here based on our KPIs and our growth and our broader TAM or SAM. That really allows you to, again, hopefully get credit for what you're wanting to accomplish from an equity story.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. So shifting gears a little bit, in terms of if I just look at the sector, right, that's maybe had the most IPOs, I mean, it's TMT, right? I mean, that's obvious, right? How does that kind of compare to what you see in your pipeline, understanding that obviously those things can change on a dime, right? Like they always do. But how does that compare? Is that a trend that you see continuing throughout the rest of the year and into Q1 of 26, or what are you seeing?
I do. I think we're seeing an uptick in volume and momentum across the board. We're seeing a lot of companies accelerate their timeline. And in some cases, companies that were looking to later this year are accelerating to hit the October window. And then some that were even next year are saying, you know, can we get this done sooner? So I think coming out of that August, that's a lot of companies are having their board meetings. So we're seeing a lot of timelines get more defined now. And again, all companies are at different stages, but certainly an acceleration or positive sentiment on looking at the public markets for most companies. I think we are seeing certainly TMT, and then I kind of depends on how you define it, but you know, there's an uptick in fintech And then,
Yes.
kind of adjacent to that, is digital assets. On the heels of Circle at Nasdaq, we have Gemini coming up. There was Bullish in just August. There's probably two or three more this year we expect to come to market, and then we're seeing that upward trend. So that's, again, maybe that falls into TMT.
Depends on how you look at it, right?
Exactly. And then in a few in consumer, a few in, again, healthcare, help more of the med device and healthcare tech companies. But I think broadly, from a just a volume and account perspective, TMT is certainly leading the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And related, but a little different. I mean, AI, we can't not talk about AI companies, right? So your view in terms of, is that trend also going to continue, or is it petered out a little bit, right? I mean, it's been going gangbusters for a while. And frankly, if you don't talk about AI in your earnings calls, then you're probably behind the curve, right? Like, what are you seeing in terms of those companies coming out? And maybe twofold, right? Pure AI play versus, I mean, there's a lot of adjacent, right? AI.
Yeah, well, and I think that's the catch. So I think broadly, we're still certainly in the early innings of the AI journey, and I think the outlook remains positive, especially as you mentioned, you look at the big tech earnings that continued to outperform, and multiples really kind of remained at a discount with some room to grow. And I think those Q2 earnings broadly showcased a clear divide between the winners and the strugglers, with AI investment emerging as a dominant growth factor. And then to your point, obviously there's a lot, all investors are asking, whether it be private or public, they're asking companies about the impact of AI on their businesses. And really, is this a headwind or is this a tailwind? And then also is, we're seeing a lot of companies deploying AI, in a number of ways. So one is operationally, internally, to drive efficiencies within their own business, within their own team. They're figuring out, how do we get more out of our current headcount and these resources? And then two is in the product. So how can we implement more AI solutions to drive those same efficiencies for our end users or our customers? So I do believe this is certainly here to stay. Obviously, we're able to see the trends for a lot of these public companies, as well as the questions they're asked on those earning calls from analysts. A lot of, again, headwind versus tailwind. And then as we look at the IPO markets over the private to public, I think, again, what we're seeing, and a bit on the heels of CoreWeave and some more in that infrastructure play, but I correlated a bit more to the mobile trends, where we saw embedded technology and then operating systems and infrastructure, and then up to the application layer. And I think we're going to see that similar trend now, where you have more of the data center and the chips and the software that sits on the chips, and kind of that cohort of companies that are, of course, at scale, but coming to market initially, with then the more of the application layer coming to market, maybe mid to late next year, certainly hopefully by early 2027. And a lot of that is obviously a lot of private capital going into these companies, but then that's quickly coupled with the eventual need for liquidity. And I think that's what's going to drive, as we look at the competitive nature for the AI and for that talent pool, as everybody is trying to continue to evolve the offering and get that leg up, that liquidity element is going to be crucial for a lot of these companies.
Well, and I've seen, at least in the private markets, a lot more startups and the efficiency of both energy and just overall, for the data centers, for the chips, right? Like, you see a lot of those, which makes sense, right? It takes a lot of energy. And so the more efficient you could make that, I think that I've seen a lot of capital going into that as well, which is, again, the evolution, right? Makes total sense, but it's super interesting. So switching gears again, and we've always got to talk about the regulatory landscape, right? What are you hearing in terms of tariffs and all of that? I know when we talked last time, we were much earlier days, right? And so it was a much different conversation than hopefully we've got today. But what are your views there?
Yeah, I think just as you mentioned, and I referenced it a bit, just around Liberation Day, and we saw a very volatile reaction in the equity markets. But it was only but a few weeks later that the equity markets and investors really started to price in the risk of what this input means to their portfolio and to the broader markets and to certain companies. And then we saw that market turn favorable, broadly speaking, and really trend incredibly well over the course of the summer, which is usually historically has been slower, right? It's kind of the old adage, sell in May and go away. And we saw the markets hit all-time highs several times, specifically the NASDAQ. And then again, back to some of the incredible companies that came to market in that time period, May, June, and July. So I think there's a question for certain companies on how they're affected by the tariffs and, a bit more in those that hold inventory, those that have supply chain, those that have manufacturing. But I think a lot of that risk has been priced out by the markets and therefore a lot for the companies. An outstanding some large change or some unforeseen change, I believe that this coupled with the notion that we'll probably have a decrease in rates in September, at least that's what that's
I know
what
you almost are
everybody's
scared to say it, right?
thinking. Exactly. So for those companies that are more directly or perhaps indirectly affected by the tariffs, right? They're figuring out their pricing strategy, their profit margins, and those are certain key metrics that will go into their valuation. But as they kind of recalibrate some of the projections and what that means for their businesses, we're seeing them delay perhaps a quarter or 2 quarters, as opposed to pins down and never mind, we're not going public.
Right.
It's
It's just a
they.
little delayed.
Exactly. They've reverted to a bit more of a delay or a wait and see, and let's get our arms around this. And then we want to still be ready so that when that window's open for a company like ours, we can thread the needle and go.
So this may be a self-fulfilling prophecy, this question I'm going to ask you. So I'm calling myself out. But if you were to put a time frame on, so the companies that are in your backlog, right, in terms of like average amount of time that they spent getting ready to go public, how long would that be? And again, I say we sell IPO readiness services. Sherry Major, I think you know her. She's a phenomenal. That I do think it's a best practice, right? And it's something that most companies should do. But how long do you think most of those companies have spent preparing? Whether by choice or by, plan.
By mandate. I guess there's a bit of definition around readiness and kind of planning, right? Because as you know, for some of
Absolutely.
the readiness that needs to be, you've got your audited 2-year audited financials, then you have your readiness itself from a consulting practice and ensuring that you have the right systems in place, you can close the books. So I think broadly to kind of pinpoint it, I'd say probably about 18 months, given
That's what I was
everything that
hoping you were going to
goes.
say, Jack.
Oh, well, there you go. And we didn't even
We
practice.
didn't even practice that.
But I do believe that's best practice, again, giving everything that it takes for a successful offering. There can be rush jobs and certainly, so I should say, accelerations. But in those cases, those are typically mature companies that have the systems in place
They
that
didn't need as much preparation, probably, right? They're,
that's
they
it.
were partially ready, and so to make that turn didn't take as much effort for them.
Exactly. So it's kind of, hey, we can check these boxes or we can get this done in a quarter, then perfect. Now you can start to focus on some of the investor and, ensuring now maybe a bit more capital markets focused element of the process. But for those that aren't ready yet, and they, again, the board says, hey, we want to be ready by Q3. And they're like, oh, shoot, we need to hire, we need to fix XYZ. Then again, the more time you have, like any project, then the more time you have to prepare and ensure that you're ready to go. Because as we know too, once you get not only to IPO, but once you're on the other side and you are now a public company, the markets can be very punishing if you're not ready. If you don't have that visibility
Right.
into your revenue and your forecast, if you don't have, again, the story around your path to profitability or how you'll increase your margins over the
Right.
next few quarters. And then you have to show that. So not only it's one thing to say, hey, here's our outlook for the next few quarters, but how do you each quarter when you close the books, how do you show that you are continuing to work towards what you're telling the street?
Right. Absolutely. So, digging a little bit into that backlog, we talked about the sectors, right? But what are you seeing? You touched on this a little bit, but I think it's a really important point in terms of the, I think you mentioned that the backlog might be speeding up, meaning wanting to go a little bit earlier than maybe say they planned in the first half of the year.
Yes. So I think and back to kind of those sectors, we're seeing an acceleration for software and just kind of double clicking into TMT. Again, I know I mentioned the broader term and the
Yeah.
fintech element, but I'd say we're seeing more in software. We're seeing a handful more in the marketplace. We are seeing biotech and pharma has hit a bit of
You
a
are.
headwind
Yes, that's what I was looking.
Just as things are continuing to shake out there, a lot of the public stocks in aggregate have not performed as well over the last 18 months. And a lot of that was just we had a glut of biotechs that listed in 2020 and 2021. So that
Right.
really flooded the market. And that was just really kind of spreading the capital thin across
Yeah.
that cohort of names. And so I think there's a little bit of a reset in that market. And then just broadly speaking, across all sectors, we do anticipate more in the sponsored-backed companies coming to market.
Okay.
So the private equity or the growth equity companies and a
Yeah.
handful of these are more we call them the boomerang. So they were public, they were taken private by a sponsor and now they're
Interesting.
looking to
Super
come back.
interesting.
Yeah,
Okay.
and
I'm excited to see that.
I agreed. And a lot of these again are incredible companies, incredible management teams. For one reason or another, they were taken private. A lot of these sponsors do incredible jobs in driving those operational efficiencies. And then once they come back to market, they're ready for prime time. And I think with the
Yeah,
prospect of the
awesome.
interest cut rates,
Yeah.
again, knock on wood, at some point here
Yeah.
this fall.
I just did it.
But that also, for those private equity backed candidates that may have debt on the balance sheet or leverage on the balance sheet, this perhaps gives them an opportunity to recap or recapitalize some of the debts, get those ratios back into something perhaps more attractive for the public markets. And then also you can use now the IPO and some of the uses of capital from that offering to pay down that debt further. So it just makes it
Sure.
a more dynamic and perhaps attractive market for those companies.
That's exciting. I did not know that's what you were going to say. I really like that. I think that'll be really fun to see.
Yeah, agreed. I
Yeah.
agree. We're excited.
So last topic, alternative investments. So SPACs. We always got to talk about
Yeah.
SPACs, right? What are your thoughts on that in terms of other ways to list besides your traditional IPO?
Yeah. So SPACs are, I don't want to say SPACs are back, but I guess I said it.
Yeah, you did.
So there's been about 80 new SPAC listings so far this year.
Yeah.
And I think what we've the markets have been able to digest a bit with these vehicles coming off again the highs of 2021, where there were over
Yeah.
600 SPAC listings. But again, as
Right.
we joke, anytime the athletes or the actors start doing investment vehicles, you know that
Yeah.
there's the other shoe's going to drop. And so as you look at the class of SPAC sponsors that are bringing deals to market, these initial SPAC listings, they are sophisticated investors,
Yeah.
and they have found the way they're structuring the deal, the way they have the pipe pre-negotiated or pre-baked as part of this offering. It gives them a higher degree of confidence or probability of success for that combination. And we're seeing, again, back to quality companies choose to go this path. And it's a bit quicker to market. It's at a valuation that makes sense for them. And so there's been about 25 SPAC combinations year to date. So
okay.
We're seeing positive signs there. I will caveat, as we all do, that it's not for everyone. It's not for every company. You have to certainly understand the pros and cons of going this route versus a traditional IPO. But there are success stories, again, for those that have chosen this path. And I think, again, with the quality of sponsors and those particular sponsors that will roll up their sleeves and help to be a good partner, the way you private companies look at their investors and look at their boards and how they kind of qualify who's actually going to help them get from A to B and have a 3-year look for the business. A lot of these SPAC sponsors are those individuals or those firms, and that's where we're seeing the success for the companies choosing that path.
That makes sense. You mentioned there's pros and cons. Can you maybe two things? Can you mention some of those pros and cons of, you know, doing or not doing a SPAC? And then also, are there particular industries that you're seeing it work well in?
Yeah. So from a pros and cons perspective, I think the biggest pro is you have the right investment group and SPAC sponsor that has the expertise in your particular sector. They understand your business. They have a network where they can help, make
they can put together the pipe, right?
Exactly. And from an investment perspective, but also as you think of a business development perspective, right? So a lot of these, if you're going after a particular market, you'd want that board member that understands, hey, right. I used to work in insurance and I understand the risk and how to scale a business in this sector, in this market. So I think those are some of the pros that you can be a bit more selective initially in who's coming on the cap table and who you're partnering with. We are seeing these deals accelerate. So that was one of the initial attributes of a SPAC listing is you can pre-negotiate your valuation. And then it would be anywhere from 3 to 4 months to get a deal done from an announced deal to the close and shareholder vote and out. Then through 22 to really earlier this year, that elongated to about 7 months.
Yeah.
And so then it was a bit more of, okay, we're not faster to market. Does it make more sense to do a traditional IPO to diversify the cap table and have... again, just a bit more of a traditional process.
Right.
Recently, we're seeing those timelines expedite or shorten, I should say, back to kind of a 4 to 5 month timeframe. And I think there's a good playbook there, again, for certain companies to, again, meet with other investors, to share their investment story or their equity story with investors. And then we're also seeing a slight tick down in the redemption rates. Which was an overhang. And I think the cons to that on the other side of it is just ensuring that you have, there is risk, I should say, that you have enough volume in your stock. So if not enough individuals, whether it be institutional investors or retail investors, if you don't have that analyst coverage, do enough individual investors or firms know that you're public? Do they understand your story? How do you market to them to bring them into your stock? And so that can be a bit of a struggle for companies that go through the SPAC. And then specifically, again, on that, just around that analyst coverage. So some have deemed this and walked away from just covering SPAC combinations. And therefore, if you don't have coverage, it's just tough to really have that launch through that combination and for those subsequent quarters. It just puts a bit more of that onus on your investor relations officer or broadly the management team.
Yeah, absolutely. And are there particular industries that you're seeing this work well in, or is it kind of across the board?
It's been across the board. I think as we look at the announced deals, we are seeing more in the digital asset space. So again, you're just fitting with the theme of 25, I'd say, certainly post-Genius bill. So more in that digital asset space broadly, right? So that's everything from treasuries to bitcoins to blockchain. So the entire ecosystem. We're also seeing more in, I'd say, kind of the next generation of robotics and some of that in autonomous driving. So those are good quality companies. A lot of them have, you know, very established revenue and customer bases, and they elected to go this route again, a lot more related to the right partner that is going to support them and help them to be successful as a public company. But I'd say those are probably the two most common right now as we look at the completed deals as well as the announced deals coming to market.
Well, I'm really happy to hear it's matured, right? And so now it's being done in the right way, and you still have to be accountable, right? And make sure you've got everything ready to go and you can be a public company. But that's great to hear that that is part of the kind of the secret sauce. Like, you can't just, you know, go out, right? I mean, there were all kinds of crazy things that happened in 21. So we'll just let that be. So final question, Jack, predictions for the rest of 25 in terms of the IPO market in the US, and then Q1 of 26.
I'm excited and bullish. I think we're going to continue through the end of the year. I think we are going to continue to see the market trend in a positive direction. I just historically there may be some pullback just given how hot the market has been, especially year
Totally.
to date. The Nasdaq itself is up 9% year to date. The S&P is up probably 8 and 8.5 or so. The VIX is pretty stable around probably 15 or so. So I think there's enough momentum and positive sentiment that we're going to continue to see successful debuts. I think also as we think put our investor hat on, as the market continues to trend in a positive direction, investors are seeking alpha, right? They're having to
Absolutely.
outperform these benchmarks. So having, again, quality names coming to market, but specifically new names, allows them to capture some of that upside for these IPOs. And I think after each positive deal that comes to market, that, you know, really motivates perhaps another 5 or 10 that are in that space or that are watching some of these first movers get out, see how they trend. And now they're saying, okay, we're ready. We want to kind of track that. And our comp just traded well. So excited for remainder of this year and certainly into 26. Again, you know, we all have our crystal balls. Ours, I was a bit cracked this year when we first spoke, but I do expect this to sustain well into the first half of 26.
Yeah, perfect. Well, that is exactly what I wanted to hear, Jack. So thank you. I'm super excited about it too. I think it's an exciting time. I think there's a lot of really cool companies doing really, really cool things. And I'm just glad that, you know, to the extent they're ready and, you know, they can go out, right? So that's pretty exciting. So I cannot thank you enough, Jack, for being on. You always have such great insights, and I just really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you again for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to send you something because we're going to ask you back again.
No worries. This is all our friendship.
I appreciate it, Jack. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to KPMG's Privately Speaking podcast, and be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.